Mini episode 1673 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1673. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with two of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, and this is our most usual crew for talking baseball. We did not have this crew together. We had one of the gentlemen for our postseason discussions because we had a situation here where anytime there's a Philadelphia team that is in anything big, generally we try to work it in with Joe Stazek, a good friend of the show here, Philly sports legend and one half of the great sports talking podcast, Callous Remarks. Ironically, he was here in place of our usual baseball cohort, Steve Callous. Steve Callous, the namesake of and co-host of Callous Remarks. So it is great to be able to welcome back Steve Callous here as we are reviewing the 2023 MLB season and maybe taking a little bit of a quick look ahead to 2024 as we look at what's already transpired in the offseason. Steve Callous, always a pleasure, my man. Thank you so much for being here.
Great to be with you guys. Looking forward to it as always.
Really glad to have you. And as always, the other gentleman in the mix here, my man Ken Detweiler. Going back to the old Sports Talk Network days when I was a sidekick on Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler, I've been talking baseball with this man since the mid-2000s, and it continues on here in the FDH Lounge. My great friend, Ken Detweiler, glad to have you here, buddy.
Hey, glad to be with both of you guys, Steve. It's good to get a little mix here, roll up our shirt sleeves, and let's get after.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, two super good friends of mine. Glad to have you guys here to be able to do this, to be able to break it down. And the 2023 season, it was one of the very big rules changes, of course, with the outlawing of the radical shift, at least in baseball. Some kind of shifting still permissible on each side of the field, but no more of the radical shifting. Of course, the other moves to encourage base running, whether it be limiting the pickoff moves, enlarging the bases a bit. Stolen bases did go very much up. They went up to about the 2013-2014 level. So before the last couple of years, I think it had the effect of reversing the whole advanced metrics kind of scorn of stolen bases, that they were a little bit too risky. It was a way for baseball to sort of turn the risk curve the other way. And it did encourage more base running and more active type style of baseball, as we saw in the postseason with Arizona. They really embodied it, particularly in the month of October. And other changes, again, this year that were made to speed up the game, although, as my great friend Steve Callous pointed out previously, they're not giving away any of the beer commercial time to be able to slice times off of the games. But games were shorter this year. They moved quicker with the pitch count, the pitch clock that was out there. So I'm going to start with you, Steve Callous, since it's been a little bit longer since we've had you on the show to talk some baseball here. So thoughts on the season, some of the most outstanding headlines, whether it be positive or negative, that you saw from 2023 in Major League Baseball?
Well, I think the thing that bothers me the most, well, the runner on second, the beer league softball rule, I call it. Now they have that in the playoffs, yeah, as you know, but to have that, which literally in New York, when I watched my father play softball, you know, literally 50, 60 years ago, it was the beer league softball rule. People had to get home for dinner. They started doubleheaders at 1, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, softball doubleheaders, and they just did that to end the game. I don't. Yep. That's not baseball to me. We can talk about the other ones. For example, Acuna, who I think is going to be the MVP and should be, you know, the first 40-70 guy ever. I think he had 41 homers and 72 stolen bases. Are we putting an asterisk next to stolen bases? Because they're, what, 3 inches closer or 6 inches closer? I'm still not sure. I know the bases were bigger. But, you know, in a game of inches, and if you guys watch, and I know you guys watch, how many, when guys are running and teams ran this year, how many times was there a bang-bang play at second where if it was 3 or 6 inches shorter, the guy would have been out, and this time he was safe? So I'm not big on the new rules myself. I like the timing rules, but Rick correctly said, if they took 1 minute of commercials out after every half inning, you just go poof and the games would be 18 minutes shorter automatically, no matter what happened on the field. So I'm a little down on that. And my biggest complaint, because I want you guys to talk as well, my biggest complaint is I think after watching this year, where you had 300-win teams get knocked out in what I call the first round, I think there's such an advantage now to the team that wins the real first round, the 2 out of 3. I used to think it was ridiculous to have your season disappear in one game after 162. But now I think the winners of those 2 out of 3 have a big advantage over the teams that had a much better record than they did. So you had the Orioles over 100 wins. You had the Dodgers 100 or more. The Braves 100 or more. And not only did they all lose, I think the Dodgers got swept. I mean, there weren't even series. None of them went to 5 games when they had to go 3 to 5. So I think, and they already asked Manfred about this. I don't know if you guys heard that. He goes, oh, well, this is only the second year we've done that, and it's such a short sample. We can't just change it now. And I think, what more do you need than to have the teams with the 3 best records in baseball, 3, get out in what was their first round? So those are my real pet peeves more than anything. But yes, you're right, Rick. The games being shorter is a big plus.
Yeah, and that's the thing too here, where I'm going to emphasize that for hardcore guys like us, the rules changes are not so much aimed at us. But I will say, FDH Lounge dignitary Ben Chu, being a millennial, it's basically for him and for the Zoomers out there, the folks where they'll just outright tell you they don't have the attention span to watch MLB. Ben told me he found the games a lot more watchable this year when he did watch. And again, you know, we're going to die off before they are. So, you know, in terms of there still being a game, you know, these are the things that have to happen. I'm being maybe newly pragmatic in my old age here. But the other thing, too, I will agree with you on the playoffs, Steve, because I think it's a thing where you've got that standing start. If you're a team like Atlanta, it's the same thing that happened a year ago. Philadelphia barrels in with all the momentum. And I will say, the only round where I picked Arizona to win in the playoffs this year was the round against the Dodgers, because I was like, they're going to come in after what they just did to Milwaukee. They're going to come in and just run all over the Dodgers. Like, I could see that one from a mile away. I wasn't right about Arizona in the round before or the round after. I was right about them in the World Series. But that is a thing where, yeah, I think they're going to have to figure that out, because you don't want it to be a disincentive. And again, for the teams that have to play in the first round, you're 1 or 2 bad days, really 2 bad days, I guess, away from your season being over. But if you survive, I do agree, you've got a tremendous advantage over the guys that have been sitting there being rusty, having to play inter-squad games, as I understand some of them were doing during the week to try to fight the rust a little bit. So,
you know. I can just say one thing, and you guys both know this quote. To me, it's the greatest baseball quote ever, and it's from Earl Weaver. This ain't football. We do this every day.
Yeah.
So after you play the final weekend of the season, and you literally have to get at least 4 days off.
Yeah.
Maybe even 5, or maybe even, I don't know when, we never got to the third game. But if you have 4 days off and you go, oh, no, you want to play.
Yeah.
You want to play the same football. This ain't once a week. It's not basketball or hockey. So I think that's one of the greatest quotes of all time. And I think it applies here, because you don't do it every day if you were good enough to not have to play in the first round.
Well, yes. It's disruptive of rhythm. And anything that is disruptive of rhythm, I think, undermines the entire advantage of being a number one or a number two seed. So I agree with you in that way. Going to turn to you, Kenny D, for your thoughts on some of the things that Steve and I were talking about, as well as your biggest headlines of 2023.
Well, you know, I'm a little bit different, and that's what makes us, the three of us, so much fun to be doing this.
That's right.
First, going back to Steve initially, next year I understand they're going to have 4 outfielders. to go with the guy at second base. I don't know if that's just a rumor or not, but at any rate, that was one of the things. The other thing is, I'm trying to look at it from the other end, where these guys have earned the bye, as far as, and this is just being just different. They've sat around, they've healed their wounds, they've gotten better, they've got everything lined up as far as their rotation and who's going to be here, who's going to be there. So that's an advantage. So I don't know, like I said, I'm not going to agree with the commissioner because I don't care for the guy all that much. but at any rate, it is a small sample size. I'd like to go back and see what the years in the past, how that played out. And maybe somebody will come up with that before we go back and talk again. The thing that grates on me is the one rule about the runners, and to go along with Steve, the extra, 3 inches on the base. I'm looking at it in this as a coach here, and in some of these other coaches, I'm sure they're looking at this stuff already. I think that the base stealing is going to get only worse for the simple reason that you have 3 throws over to first, and the third one, you know he's coming over. He's got to get you.
Right.
All right. So now you file that away as a first base coach and as a runner. Plus, you add to that, if you're watching the time clock, you've got that you can factor in when you're stealing bases also. Am I saying that? You understand what
I'm
saying?
I know exactly. Exactly. It distorts the entire balance of it. Yes, you're right about that.
So I'm thinking, along with what you were saying, Rick, earlier, with these young guys coming in and just running to the races, how is the catcher going to get these guys out if these guys, and these guys are all smart people who run these organizations, they're going to see this, and going back, you know, with Judge, you know, maybe he is a dinosaur of some sorts with these. If I'm seeing this correctly, that's where I would go. I would start getting guys who are just gazelles and just start running. And I'd just say, hey, throw over, beg them to throw over so they use those 2 throws over. Now you can take that off the table, watch the time clock. And there's ways of getting around that, which I'm sure much smarter people than me have noticed that.
Oh, very good points there, and I want to turn to Steve here in a second, because again, you mentioned Aaron Judge, and I had said off air, I was sort of connecting some kind of dots here. When you're talking about, obviously, positive surprises for the season, Arizona and Texas, both of them just 2 years off of 100 loss plus seasons making the World Series and Texas winning it. Those were two of the bigger positive surprises in baseball. Two of the negative surprises, the biggest ones, are both New York teams. And I was musing off air a bit about Aaron Judge, and not about him personally necessarily, but like the entire approach of when a guy like that comes on the market, you throw that kind of money at him. Maybe Giancarlo Stanton would be a much better example of what I'm talking about, because that whole kind of just mash the ball, uppercut swing, everything like that, the way that the game was going, and we haven't completely gotten away from the uppercut swing part of it, but some of what the rules changes were devised to do this year were to counteract the role in the last almost but not quite a decade as far as the advanced metrics, all the StatCast stuff, that it was a thing. The three of us have bemoaned on the show, I believe, that the game was getting more unwatchable because of these things, the three true outcomes. So it was an attempt to kind of make the game a little bit more like it used to be, maybe not quite like the 80s with the stolen bases, but a bit more in that direction. And it was a little heavy-handed, some of the tools they were using, but they were trying to get the game back in that direction a little bit more. And I'm sort of connecting the dots with the Yankees that they appear to be looking at sort of yesterday's men as far as guys like maybe not so much Judge specifically as Stanton. He's yesterday's right. man. Today's man and yep. tomorrow's men are Acuna and Corbin Carroll. So in looking at that here, you got to have the farm system to be able to belch these guys out because, you know, they're going to be at the height of their powers when they're younger. It seems like it's become a younger man's game. Corbin Carroll. I mean, I somewhat kind of tongue-in-cheek on the World Series review a bit compared him to Victor Wembanyama as far as, you know, immediate impact on hitting the big time. So I'm going to turn to you on this here, Steve, as far as, again, the ways that the game is changing and some of the ramifications of it.
Well, I would first say, where have you gone, Whitey Herzog?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Because he'd be the best manager in baseball if he managed today.
Yes.
No, I think you're totally right, but I think Stanton is a much better example than Judge. Because I'll say, you know, Judge had that freak accident. You probably saw him running into that fence in Los Angeles against the Dodgers. It was really bizarre, but he put up phenomenal numbers. He missed, like, I want to say 35 games because of that. He was on pace. And I understand you can't really do this, but again, he would have hit into mid to high 50s again this year after going 62, which I think is the only reason Ohtani lost the MVP last year. I don't know if we're going to talk about it. I assume he's going to get it this year, even though he got hurt. But I think you're right. I think they're trying to make it a faster game, but it is going back to the old days when you know, people stole bases. And again, Whitey Herzog, the best example I can remember. But I think that's true, and that's happening. And while you say it's a great positive surprise that Arizona made the World Series, I don't disagree. They had a great run. But again, to me, this is my lifetime objection forever that isn't worth 10 cents.
I know what you're going to say. Six seed.
No, there's too many teams in the playoffs. Come on. There's too, yeah. You know, started that 7-10 debacle in the NBA, which is – as it's a bigger joke than the in-season basketball tournament they're doing now, which makes no sense. But I think, you know, it's look, I'm rubbing my fingers together. It's all about the money. That's why you have a 7 basketball. That's why you have another wild card in football. That's why you have more wild cards. And I stuck up for baseball forever, as you guys know, because they didn't have a wild card. I said, this is the only true sport. You win your division. But when you win the wild card, by definition, you haven't come in first, by definition. So
yeah.
So now they let the losers come on and win. So I was kind of disappointed, 84 wins. I know people will throw up the 73 Mets were 82-79. They didn't have to play that 162nd game. And they took the Oakland A's in the middle of their dynasty to 7 games. But they also had the Met pitching staff from 69, or a big part of it. And when you come down to the playoffs, to me, it's still kind of pitching wins the day. As much as the old days when all these guys pitched, you know, complete games. Nowadays, you come out for the seventh, you're a hero. Oh, he's coming out for the seventh. Oh, he's facing the batters for a third time. Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't know what happened the first 100 years of baseball when that didn't matter. But the stats are the stats.
Yeah, I would agree with that. By the way, and I do agree with what when you said that I was closer to the mark on talking about Stanton rather than Judge being yesterday's man. But I will tell you this, though. Judge is going to be yesterday's man 6 or 7 years from now because that contract is going to age like milk, just like the Miguel Cabrera contract did, just like the Pujols contract did. When you're giving a guy who's 30 years old that kind of a deal, and again, somebody who... I'm not saying that what happened to him this year foretells that he's going to break down prematurely, but the aging curve, again, post-steroid era, the aging curve is back. It's been back for about 15 years plus. So the back end of this thing is going to be fugly for the Yankees, and there's nothing they can do about it. And again,
right.
Just,
you're totally right. I don't think any of those guys have ever really worked out. And I don't know what they're going to do with Ohtani. He's an interesting guy because he got hurt now. And certainly can't pitch next year. I don't know if he's getting that $500 million or whatever people were talking about. But 10 years from now, do I think he'll be a two-way guy who's a big factor? No, look at Mike Trout. Look at what happened to him now. That's been like 3 years.
Yeah.
And he's only in, the fifth year next? So it's you have to overpay. And I think the goal is to get one or two World Series in whoever it is his first 5 years. And then it's worth it. Or maybe even one World Series is worth it.
Yeah.
But my goodness, you know, the Rendon contract, I thought the Angels were going to be good this year. I thought they had the best 2-3-4 in baseball in any way you want to do it. Trout, Ohtani, Rendon. And now this question, Rendon doesn't even want to play baseball or something.
It's
the $250 million contract, or whatever he got. The money is stupid money now, but all of them, I think, are going to be bad contracts at the end of the year, at the end of the contract. The question is, how soon does it start, Rick? That's the real question.
Well, it's the eternal story of L.A., stars and scrubs. It's the way the Angels always roll. The Dodgers were more of that this year because they cut their payroll a little bit so they could put aside money for Ohtani. The Rams were a glorified stars and scrubs even when they won the Super Bowl. The Chargers, I tell people every year, they're more stars and scrubs than you think they are, and every year they prove me right. On and on we go. I'd put the Clippers in there, maybe not the Lakers as much after the offseason that they had, but, you know, it's a weird, weird commonality about SoCal, and yeah, the Angels never have depth because they are so top-heavy on their payroll. At least in their case, it's explicable. They're spending it mostly on a couple of guys, and Trout, believe it or not, already can be had apparently at this point in a trade, and you might have to eat some money to do it. So the worm has turned on that one quickly as far as how that goes. And as far as Ohtani, this is going to basically be, the pitching years are going to be sort of the donut hole of the next contract, but sort of a reverse donut hole. You won't get pitching this year. You won't get pitching on the back end. You'll get it in the middle of the deal, the second year to maybe the sixth, maybe the seventh year if you're lucky, and then he'll just be a hitter again. And yeah, it's not going to age well contract-wise. But Ken, pivot to you here for any of your thoughts on what we've been saying about how the game is evolving and any of your own thoughts about it.
Well, I'm going to fill this out to both of you gentlemen. The thing that still bothers me, like, with all these rule changes and everything else, the total number of home runs increased this year over the previous year.
Yeah.
And also the number of strikeouts increased. And I still love to watch the game as it's unfolding to a point, because now there's more bunting. It's called baseball. I'm a guy that says, hey, let's move the runner over in the scoring position. Get on, get over, get him in. So, but I'd like to know what your thoughts are, gentlemen, with the fact that there are more home runs now, with that uppercut swing and the, you know, all this other stuff. And the number of strikeouts are just ungodly.
I can say this, Ken, I can say this. When we were young, it was an embarrassment to strike out.
Yeah.
It's like 30s and 40s, you had a lot of slap hitters and not a lot of power hitters. Obviously, Ruth changed all that. But again, it was an embarrassment, even though you had guys like Mantle and Reggie Jackson later years in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. But nowadays, it's not. You can hit. I mean, I love Schwarber. He hit like 45 or 6 or 7 homers and hit 197. I don't think he hit 200. Stanton barely hit. And these guys, it's okay to strike out. And I think the analytics guys, Rick, you might know more about this than me. I think the analytics guys are still okay with that, despite all the rule changes. So if you hit 35 home runs and strike out, I'll just pick a number that used to be unattainable, 190 or 200 strikeouts. That's like okay because you hit 35 homers. It's bizarre to me, but I don't think these rule changes have really corrected the whole walks, strikeouts, home runs. I don't think that's been corrected, and I don't know if it will be.
Not that part of it, because, again, going back to, I think, Billy Beane, because, again, he's the pioneer of at least modern analytics. Billy Beane, I think, was, if I remember correctly, in the early 2000s, was relatively disdainful of stolen bases, and that's where I think it kind of dribbled down from there. You're taking too much of a chance. So that was where, again, like I said, the rules changes this way were to get away from some of the excesses of analytics, and they were able to do that as far as incentivizing running. Disincentivizing the uppercut swing, this part of it, the three true outcomes that are still prevalent, that's going to be a little bit harder. I think in my head, knowing Rob Manfred's primitive way of thinking on stuff, he was probably hoping it would go away on its own. Like, oh, well, if we get rid of the shift, then it won't be a thing. Then guys like Joey Gallo won't have to worry about the fact that they're hitting it right at the guys anymore, and maybe they'll be able to, sneak one through. Maybe they were figuring that Joey Gallo and the likes of them would turn into Wee Willie Keeler, hit it where they ain't, because if the shift's not there anymore, then maybe you can do it. That's my theory, is that I think they were hoping that outlawing the shift would incentivize more contact hitting. It clearly didn't work. And this is the one, this is the bugaboo going forward, because this is the thing that still makes baseball When we talk about the watchability of it and the way that it plummeted in the last decade with analytics taking over, this is the part that's going to be harder to shake. I don't know what you do about it. I mean, the obvious answer would be move the fences way back or move the fences way up. But that's not going to happen, particularly the way up part. Then you're having to reconfigure the ballparks. God forbid you have to do anything to the outfield seats here. I mean, my hometown team just basically put Cal Quantrill out there because they can't afford to pay him anymore. You think they're going to pay for the bleachers to be raised up for the outfield wall to, you know, no, that ain't happening. So, you know.
It's, that's your guardians, my friend.
Yeah. Well, they'll always be the tribe to me, Kenny. But, it's a sad state of affairs. I don't know what we do about that. That's the one thing about this as far as the three true outcomes and the uppercut swing. Because, yes, analytics will tell you that strikeouts are not the anchor around the neck, the millstone that we might see them as, those of us traditionalists. So, yeah. You know, as we start to look into next season, there have been some things here in the offseason thus far. Craig Counsell with the kind of shocking move to the north side here with the Cubs. Nobody saw that one coming. By the way, for everybody shedding tears for David Ross, when he was out there getting his name mentioned before there was even a vacancy there, when the manager who led him to a World Series, Joe Maddon, still had a job, and David Ross was letting his name be circulated as the manager in waiting. I don't remember anybody talking about that at the time, so I don't feel sorry for David Ross. You live by the sword, you die by the sword. But as far as, you know, any thoughts for early thoughts for next year, we'll kind of end it on that part here. I'll start with you, Steve.
Well, apparently Counsell did not, and you kind of see the way he is as a player and as a manager. Apparently he just didn't want to go to New York and deal with all that mess.
Right.
But I also think, you know, Chicago's not the easiest place to play either. It's not as bad as New York. I did want to step back one thing quickly on the New York problems that I know you wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you cutting this short a little for me. But I have a friend, Brenda Selman, who is a diehard Mets fan. She's also a good bowler. I saw her last night at the bowling alley. I hadn't seen her in a while. I said, so who's worse, the Yankees or the Mets? Now, she's a diehard Mets fan. You know I'm a Yankee guy. So, of course, she said the Yankees. But then she said the Yankees should have fired their manager and didn't. And the Mets should not have fired their manager and did. So they're both stupid. And I totally agree with that because Buck Showalter, they actually got the Yankees bench coach, Carlos Mendoza, with no major league managing experience. But I don't know if Buck really wants to do it next year because I think he's a Hall of Fame manager, but I think he needs a World Series. Just like I thought Joe Maddon was a Hall of Fame manager, and he finally got the World Series with the Cubs of all teams, so he'll get in. But I just thought the way she expressed it was the perfect way to look at what's happened in New York, how Aaron Boone has this protection, and he, you know, the Yankees have won once in 23 years or whatever it's been now, and things have changed. You know, I don't know that you guys are going to ever be calling me for the World Series preview with a New York team in the next 5 years, 10 years, I don't know, but I just wanted to say that. As for next year, I'm going to like the Braves. I thought the Padres could make a run last year, but I kind of like the Braves. I think their pitching will be much better because they'll be healthy. So I'll just leave it there and congratulate my guy Blake Snell, who had the greatest 23-game streak in the history of baseball, where he only gave up 19 runs, 18 earned. He was 1-6 in the middle of May with a 5 ERA, and he was 14-9 with a 2.23 and deserved the Cy Young, in my opinion.
Yeah, and well, you know, Spencer Strider had a great year, too. You know, you had two really, really strong candidates. And as far as it goes with Aaron Boone, let me quote, I can do no better than quoting the great AEW world champion MJF, mid. That's what I think of when I think of Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone is mid. And, yeah, how he keeps his job, I have no idea.
Wow.
Yeah, there, I said it. So, but, Steve, I know you got to get going, so I will bid you adieu as Ken and I wrap it up. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, fellas. Always a pleasure.
All right, really great having you on. Steve Callis from the Callis Remarks Podcast, FDH Lounge Dignitary Extraordinaire. Thank you so much, Steve. Ken, as you and I wrap it up here, any reactions to what Steve had to say, as well as your own thoughts, taking an early look into next year?
I didn't get to congratulate him because Houston didn't make it this year.
Exactly.
And I know how much him and I love your Astros. not you personally, but yeah. The Astros.
Yeah.
I can talk ad nauseum about the Guardians and the name switching, and now I understand that even Oakland is now, the A's are moving out of town.
Yes, the Las Vegas A's, the site of the old Tropicana, as it were. Tropicana will be biting the dust.
Yeah, I mean, how many times has a team in the history of the game, and I know you and Steve and I both know, or all three of us know, the history of the Oakland A's from Philadelphia to Las Vegas now?
Well, Kansas City and Oakland in between, of course. And by the way, yes. The most hilarious thing, do you know who tried to gatekeep the Oakland A's from coming to town? Did you hear about this? Did you hear who it was?
No.
Mark Davis. Mark Davis was telling him, stay in Oakland. That is very, very rich.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, I guess.
Well, yeah. Physician, heal thyself, right?
Yeah. But, this year I enjoy it. I enjoy the playoffs probably more than I ever have. For whatever reason, I don't know. Maybe it's the underdogs coming through. Maybe it's the young kids getting in there. It's the teams that didn't have the great pitching, but yet somehow got through the third time in the batting order and things of that nature. But a home show for me would be talking about how many managers we have in the major leagues now that are new.
Yep.
One is definitely a guy who I was involved with way back when, and that's Pat Murphy, who's now the manager of the Milwaukee team. And he was also the head coach at Notre Dame, mm-hmm. and Arizona State. And I followed him way back when. And I'm just excited to see how he goes. He's a no-nonsense guy. And also, I think Council actually played for him
mm-hmm.
at Notre Dame.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, a lot of connections there. So, it will be interesting to see. And for the teams we were talking about here, Mr. Callis, counselor, was talking about the Atlanta Braves, and they were my pick coming into the season to win the World Series and the beginning of the playoffs, everything like that. It is very interesting that both they, in terms of their offensive numbers, they had a historic regular season offensively, shades of the 95 Indians, who they kept from winning the World Series. But Atlanta, of course, doesn't even make it to the League Championship Series. And Tampa Bay starting the year, what was it, 13-0, so a historic start to the year. So you had two teams at various points in time where you looked at it, and it was like history has decreed that this team will win the World Series, and neither of them was even in the League Championship Series. So that's a sign of how much this is becoming March Madness. So like you just kind of shake the names in a hat, pull two teams out, there's your two World Series participants.
Well, and you know what? Rick, the thing with the Braves, and it's no fault of their own, they had a ton of injuries, and as did other teams.
Uh-huh.
But I think if they were a healthy pitching staff, I think they would have gone through people like White on Rice. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, that's the ifs and buts and all that nuts and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. What say you about that? I mean, they really were hit hard with a lot of injuries, the Braves.
Yeah, they were, and it's a thing where the last couple of years, really, it's been a matter of their starting pitching getting into the playoffs, and it's just a matter of is it going to hold up enough. It did in 2021, it didn't last year, and it didn't this year, and they were very top-heavy when it came to the playoff time with Strider and then some of the guys behind him not being there. But, year in and year out right now, Atlanta kind of looks like the best team on paper. They would be my early favorite for next year. It would have been a heck of a World Series, really, had it been them in Texas. And that's the one thing here, too, when you look at it, as far as Texas playing Arizona in the World Series, we talked about it going into the World Series. It was hard to make the case that you had the two best teams in baseball playing. Well, Texas is definitely one of the two best teams, but they didn't play Philly, they didn't play Atlanta, and either one of them, I think, would have given them a more fitting kind of way of getting over the top than beating Arizona in what turned out to be a gentleman's sweep.
Yeah. And, I mean, but it was interesting to see, from a different point of view, I guess, to see the underdog Arizona coming through, and I liked Pochi winning it, and it was just, because I like to watch him pull the strings, these managers, and, just to watch both of the managers in the World Series, just what they did. And I didn't agree with everything they did, but that's what being a fan does for you. So,
yeah.
But, I think the Braves, I'd have to put the money on the Braves. So that means everybody should go out and not put the money on the Braves if you're going to listen to me. But it was a fun year. I can't wait for spring training and all this other stuff. And maybe as I'm sitting here listening to myself and listening to you talk about this too, maybe it's time to shorten. Well, they're not going to shorten the season, but maybe the reason all these guys have injuries, there's something going on. I mean, you got, as Steve brought up, you got Snell. The only big gripe, other than winning the Cy Young again this year, was the fact that he only goes 5 or 6 innings.
Yeah, that's true. And again, that's another way that the game is evolving. They did put they've got the 3-batter minimum in there now, right now. But again, when you're looking at it in terms of the analytics, I mean, the numbers don't lie. Third time through the order, this is where guys really start to get a lot more hittable. And that's where, again, teams are going to try to maximize. And particularly with the proliferation of power arms in the bullpen, that I go back to. I think the Royals team that won the pennant in 2014 and won the World Series in 2015, they were one of the teams I seem to remember that did, again, Kansas City, their quote-unquote market size, they weren't going to be able to go out there and have the power arms and the rotation and the big-time aces. They had Johnny Cueto, such as he was at that time, but they were doing it by... you better not be behind Kansas City after the 7th inning. And that's a model that a lot of other teams have followed, because young power arms, I think, prior to that point in time, they probably weren't valued enough. And this is where analytics, I think, did correctly put a value on young power arms. Like, well, all that guy can do is throw fastballs. How much is he worth? He's not a rotation guy. Okay, but if he can throw 100 coming out of the pen in the 8th inning, that's got to be worth a decent amount, right? So you got teams that are doing that. You're getting a good value placed on these guys, an appropriate value, I would say. So, yeah, that's part of the whole game moving forward and how adjustments continue to be made for that in terms of the watchability of the game. Because, again, you don't want it to be one of these things where come from behind wins, and we did see a decent number of them in the playoffs. I mean, that's part of the lifeblood of baseball, too. If it becomes a chokehold, like, such and such team is, 87-1 if they're leading by 2 runs after the 7th inning, like, that's not baseball. That's not the way baseball's traditionally been meant to be. It's traditionally been a 9-inning game where if you're close, you still at least have a chance. So what will they do to try to tinker with the watchability of the game moving forward here? We shall see. I don't think they're done making moves, but it's going to take another year or two in the laboratory, I think, before they really get to that point and make any further moves, as Manfred has indicated. So, always great talking about the moves of baseball with the great Steve Callis on with us now and the great Ken Detweiler. Ken, thank you so much for being on the show. I always look forward to doing this with you, and I am already looking forward to the first baseball show that we do in 2024, and that will be our annual tribute to the third member of the crew for Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler, the late, great Don Koster. We will be starting the season with that next year, as we always do, and already I can't wait.
I know, and he was such a different bird. and a good man, but boy, oh boy, I can't imagine his head exploding by now.
Yeah.
Same here, my friend.
You talk about watchability. The one thing I could never get with him was his fondness for regular season college basketball. It was like, wow. Unless it's one of my teams in it, it's not what I'd call watchable. But, you know, different strokes for different folks. And Ken is watching them all with Ken, he is up there watching them now, my friend, with the best satellite package there is. So, you know.
I wish you and him would have had a show or had him on one of your shows one time, at least once. He was a huge hockey man.
Oh, yeah.
I know you are, too.
Oh, yeah.
And so,
yeah.
He never shied away from showing his, telling you what his opinion was. So.
Oh, that's true. That's true. What a great guy, and we love celebrating him every spring. So we will be doing that the next time. And when we're talking baseball here to start the 2024 season. Thank you so much, Ken Detweiler, and thank you everybody for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1673.